Support by Anchorage, Alaska. From the Coastal Trail to Kincaid Park, Flattop, Powerline Pass, and more. There are plenty of places for a weekend hike or an exciting mountain biking excursion. Exploring your home state is the COVID-safe way to enjoy the summer.
Welcome to Native America Calling. In Anchorage, I'm Alyssa Yahyadi London. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act has far-reaching implications for Native identity and tribal governance. 50 years ago, ANCSA was a hard-fought experiment in both federal government recognition, land stewardship, and economic opportunity. Coming up this hour, we'll hear how Alaska Native identity has evolved in the half-century since it was enacted and what the promise is for the future. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A wing of the Catholic Church in Canada has apologized for what it calls the horrors that occurred in Native residential schools for more than a century. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it was the first time the prominent arm of the church has apologized.
In a statement, the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops said it acknowledged the grave abuses that were committed by some members of the Catholic community at the schools. It also said it understood the residential school system suppressed Indigenous languages, culture, and spirituality. The statement went on to say that the Catholic bishops of Canada expressed profound remorse and apologize unequivocally. Cindy Blackstock is the executive director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society of Canada. She says the apology is an important step, but it's not enough. What's needed, also, is for the Pope to come to Canada and make a formal apology.
It's not clear to me that there's been a real deliberate learning within the church about the wrongdoing even after the schools closed, their evasiveness at accepting responsibility, their legal maneuvering so they didn't have to meet their compensation obligations. All of that stuff needs a full ventilation, and there needs to be a clear commitment to learning from that as the church.
As part of the Indian Residential Schools Settlement Agreement, the Catholic Church said it would raise $25 million for survivors. Less than $4 million has been paid of that. The residential school system operated in Canada from the late 1800s to the late 1900s. About 150,000 First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children were forced to attend the schools. Native leaders say thousands were abused. Earlier this year, hundreds of unmarked graves were found on the sites of former residential schools. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Commemorations are planned across Canada for Orange Shirt Day Thursday. The day recognizes the harm Indian residential schools had on children and the intergenerational trauma. This year, September 30th, will mark the inaugural National Holiday for Truth and Reconciliation. Orange Shirt Day began in 2013 with a residential school commemoration project and reunion in Williams Lake, British Columbia. The orange shirt became a symbol after a former student shared her story of her first day at residential school when her shiny new orange shirt was taken away. Other students had similar stories. Acclaimed Navajo filmmaker Benny Klein has died. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, the documentary filmmaker focused on the intersection of modern and traditional Indigenous culture.
Klein was the founder of the Austin, Texas-based production company Trickster Films. It released the award-winning Weaving Worlds, which examined the contemporary pressures faced by traditional Navajo weavers and premiered at the 2007 South by Southwest Film Festival. Klein's 2011 film short Columbus Day Legacy also won numerous awards and chronicled the tense clashes over Denver, Colorado's Columbus Day Parade. Klein died on September 9th at his home in Tonalea on the Arizona portion of the Navajo Nation, where he had recently returned following the death of his mother. Klein's goal in his work, as he said, was to, quote, bring new voices and hidden stories to broader audiences. During his career, he premiered two films at the Sundance Film Festival and was a Sundance Institute Fellow for multiple years. Klein also broadcast Navajo language language newscasts on KTNN Radio from the tribal capital of Window Rock and was a mentor to other Navajo filmmakers. He spent much of his time, while not making films, running marathons throughout the U.S. A memorial service was held for Klain earlier this month, and a cause of death hasn't been disclosed. He was 49. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus. Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. The indigenous people of Alaska have several touchstones for their identity. There are almost 24 linguistic groups and 5 primary cultural groups. And there are also 12 active and 13 total Native regional corporations and even more village and urban corporations, made up primarily of Alaska Native shareholders. There are also 229 federally recognized tribes, which are sovereign nations, distinct from the corporation and nonprofit entities that also exist. All of these groups provide different services and benefits to the Alaska Native people they serve. This is a system established by the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, signed into law 50 years ago this December. On our show yesterday, we heard from our guest, Willie Hensley, who helped formulate ANCSA. And he said that no one beforehand envisioned that tribal governance would exist within for-profit corporations, but that is the reality for almost 50 years, and for the foreseeable future. Willie and others who created ANCSA assert they did the best they could, and Alaska Native people were on the brink of getting nothing in exchange for our land claims. Today, we'll get a clearer picture of what it means to be an Alaska Native shareholder and someone involved with the world of ANCSA. We will contrast that with what others outside of Alaska view as Native identity. And we want to hear from you, too. Join our discussion by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, our first guest today is Mr. Aaron Shutt. He's the president and CEO of Doyon Limited, and he's from the Native village of Tanana. Welcome to Native America Calling, Aaron.
Good morning, Alyssa. It's really good to be here.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here. How does ANCSA and land play into Alaska Native identity today?
Well, we have to remember that ANCSA was, at its heart, a land settlement. So unlike the rest of the country, and I think one of the best snippets from the U.S. Supreme Court was Chief Justice Roberts in the Sturgeon case said, Alaska is often the exception, not the rule. And when you're talking about our Alaska Native institutions, that pretty much summarizes us. But you know, in the case of Doyon, we own 12.5 million acres in interior Alaska, and we hold that as the trustees for all of our Alaska Native shareholders and, in some cases, people who are Alaska Native but not our shareholders. That's our land base. We, as Native people, are very much tied to our land, and that's true across Indian country. I know that from having worked early in my career all across Indian country, and that is who we are as corporations and as people that serve our shareholders at Alaska Native corporations.
How does Doyon act as a steward of their land base?
Well, there are many different aspects to that. One is just being the landowner of 12.5 million acres. There are many things you have to do. Coordinate with the federal and state governments that are generally our neighbors to all of our lands, coordinate with our tribes and communities and individual shareholders that use our lands for all sorts of things, cutting wood, hunting, fishing, cabins. We do have some resource exploration throughout our region. We have a very large voluntary forest carbon project that we're in the field on right now and in the eastern interior part of our region. So there are just numerous ways that we need to steward our land. It's a huge opportunity for us, and it's also a large burden for us.
How do you help your Alaska Native shareholders maintain their connection to the land that Doyon owns and stewards?
That's a harder concept for a corporation. And that's one of the things that when we talk about our structures here, our structures in Alaska were experiments by Congress, and it worked very well in many ways, but one of the ways it hasn't worked so well is that direct tie in our usage of our land. That's really tied to families and local tribes and local communities. So we facilitate that use as the land owner. In many cases, village corporations are also the surface owner right near our community. So most of the land use is with a village corporation. We do have programs that promote uses, and we partner with tribes and tribal organizations and others through funding and other programs to try and promote cultural education and use of our land. But that's really a local, family and tribal job to teach our youth and others how to use the land and the various places that are special within our region.
So Doyon owns the land, but then the local village corporations or heritage nonprofits allow tribal member shareholders to have access to it or facilitate those opportunities? Is that how it works?
We coordinate with them. Our shareholders don't have to ask permission to use our lands, but if there is a special use, for example, a tribe wants to build a culture camp on Doyon land, then we will coordinate with the local people to make sure that's the location that's appropriate and that everybody agrees. And then once it's in place, then usually the local tribe, sometimes the village corporation, runs like the summer program for kids. Sometimes we also help fund those programs, but it's really, again, a kind of a local use out on our lands.
What are some of the things that you are most pleased about as a result of ANCSA's legacy? How has it really helped Doyon grow?
The structure of ANCSA has provided us all sorts of opportunities, both business opportunities through things like the SBA's 8A program, other opportunities to work closely with the federal government and state government. We have an awful lot of political power through the structure that ANCSA created, both locally and nationally, to help shape programs that help benefit our shareholders and then our business. So that's one aspect of ANCSA that has worked super well. And when you look at Alaska businesses in the 2021 timeframe, you see that all of the regional corporations are among the largest Alaska businesses, and several of us are pretty large and kind of in the Pacific Northwest and country. Another thing that I think doesn't get mentioned as much is our affiliation to our shareholders, and this goes back to the unique structure. So some of our shareholders are not tribal members. Often, if they're outside of Alaska, born and raised outside of Alaska, they may not have that tie to their home tribe that's in rural Alaska, or even urban natives here in Anchorage or Fairbanks that have that same situation. They're maybe more closely affiliated with the ANCSA corporation like Doyon, so we may help reintroduce them in some cases back to their local community and help them establish ties to their family in rural Alaska and their tribes. And that's one thing we do with our community meetings that we hold or used to hold pre-pandemic across Alaska and throughout the United States.
That's wonderful. So do you see Doyon as a steward then of also the native values of your region? And you're teaching that to your community members?
We are co-stewards of that. That is work that our tribes, village corporations, and our sister nonprofit, Tanana Chiefs, also does. But, for example, we've been investing a lot of money in the Doyon Foundation in language revitalization, working with our elders and fluent speakers to get most of our dialects are now available online at the Doyon Foundation for online learning, as well as some in-person learning. But that's the type of work we can do in partnership with all the organizations across the interior. We definitely don't view ourselves as the steward, but we can contribute to preserving and enhancing and growing our culture, our various cultures. Actually, in the case of the interior, we have five or six sub-Athabascan groups within the interior.
Five or six sub-Athabascan groups in the interior. Okay, so how do you make sure that all of those distinct groups get to have a say at the table in terms of decisions Doyon makes, or making sure, I mean, they're all distinct, that their values are represented in how the business is operated?
We have pretty similar values, so the distinction is really minor differences in cultural traditions, and then the language groups are slightly different across the region, but we're pretty similar people and have been for thousands and thousands of years. So it's, in that sense, there's not a lot of difference across a very large region. Our region is about the size of the country of France, and within that, we only have maybe 10,000 Alaska Native people in rural Alaska, excluding Fairbanks.
The size of France. That really puts it into perspective. So is Doyon the largest private landholder in the state of Alaska?
Yes. Yeah, we are. And we think we're probably one of the largest in North America.
Can you tell us more about the ways that you are stewarding that land? I mean, you just touched on that there are some projects. And can you just go into those a bit more?
Sure. I mean, there are lots of different things that we work on. One is, for example, trespass. We have a large and ongoing effort to educate other users. Mainly, we're talking about hunting, but sometimes other things about our land base and making sure people know where our boundaries are. We also, again, work closely with the state and federal governments on, for example, predator control, where that's a necessary element of ensuring moose and caribou populations will work with the state government on those predator control programs. They're the state programs, but we're helping them. We've worked in the last 10 years on a reintroduction of wood bison, which is a species that vanished from Alaska hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago, and the state had a program to bring them back from Western Canada into the U.S., and the first herd was placed mainly on Doyon lands in the southwest part of our region on the Innoko River. So that's another example of working to create
a lot of work that's going on the Doyon lands. Thank you, Aaron. We're going to hear from you more after the break. For everyone else, this is Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. Call in at 1-800-996-2848. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back.
I'm Tara Gatewood. Join me for the next Native America Calling as we aim to entertain and stimulate the brain with our September Book of the Month feature. This time around, we'll visit with A'ani creative singer Horse Capture and find out why she jumped into the world of jigsaw puzzle making with the help of Native artists and their artwork.
Too many do not have access to affordable high-speed internet. That's why AARP fought for the Emergency Broadband Benefit, a federal program to help lower the cost of high-speed internet for eligible households. Those who may have experienced financial setbacks during the pandemic or are struggling to get by may be eligible for a discount of up to $50 per month for high-speed internet or up to $75 per month for households on tribal lands. Info at aarp.org/EBB. AARP supports this show.
Listening to Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Alyssa London. We are discussing tribal identity in Alaska and how it's different from in the past 50 years than it has been during the time before that. Do you have questions about how to identify Alaska Native people and how they perceive their identity? If you have insights about how to express your tribal identity, give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, before the break, we were speaking with the CEO of Doi Unlimited, Aaron Shutt, and he was talking about the stewardship of their lands. But we also have a caller, Pat Kotak, the chair of the Arctic Slope Board. He has a comment.
Hello. Thanks for having me on. I'm calling from my camp between Barrow and Wainwright, between Telvik and Rona. And it was interesting to hear Dr. Willie Hensley speak of ANCSA and the history and where we've, how far we've gone so far in our struggle. And today hearing Aaron speak about ANCSA, there's a couple of things that come to my mind. It's our challenge as a landowner, keeping in mind that this was a land settlement and the amendments that Willie mentioned yesterday were so very important. It kept the corporations in the native hands, keeping it private, not going public, and making sure that every corporation has the opportunity to include the afterborns, our descendants, who were not included in the original. We've come a long ways, and the challenge that we have, I believe, is really what rights we have to develop our own lands. And in this day and age, with the extreme environmentalist, extreme animal rights groups, we are challenged to develop our own lands for our shareholders' benefits. Keeping in mind this is a public law 92-203 that everyone has to deal with, not just the natives. And this is where we have to work together to see that vision of our natives prospering within our own state. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, thank you, Crawford. Thank you for your comment. Well, you mentioned afterborns. I think I would fall into that camp. We have my father, Tate London, who is a federal prosecutor and was on the Sea Alaska Board of Directors for 15 years. Dad, you're Tlingit, therefore I am Tlingit. Any thoughts on the term afterborns and the legacy of descendants of Alaska, of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and of Alaska Native Corporations?
Good morning, Alyssa, and thank you for having me on the show. You have quite a panel here this morning. And my thoughts on, you know, afterborns is not really probably the most politically correct term. At Sea Alaska, we referred to descendants or new natives. And at Sea Alaska, I think we continue to struggle, and I think we've done some good things about enrolling new natives, giving them life estate shares if they have a quarter blood quantum, so that they become part of the Sea Alaska family. But going forward, as blood quantum has continued to be diluted, the Sea Alaska and the other regional corporations will face the issue of should you be enrolling your descendants. And I know that's an important issue for Sea Alaska going forward.
Thank you, Dad. Aaron, what is Doyon's stance on descendants and the identity of their shareholders as the generations continue to progress forward and people may be marrying with other people outside of the community?
It's a really important question for all of us at ANCSA regional corporations and village corporations. Doyon was among the first regional corporations to open its rolls in 1992, so I got my shares in Doyon at that time. I tell our shareholders, especially our children, that that was the greatest gift our elders could have given us to open the rolls at that time. It wasn't mandatory. It was a discretionary act by Doyon. It took a lot of work to have that annual meeting where they voted to open the rolls. And then we did it again. So that was a one-time deal in 92. And then we did it again when I was first at Doyon to make it perpetual. And that's where we've grown from 9,081 original shareholders to about 20,500. And now our people born after 1971 dramatically outnumber original shareholders, which after 50 years, that's what you'd expect. So that's why it was so important for us as a corporation and for our identities as Alaska Natives to where we hold and own the land to enroll our youth all across our region. Now, there are questions about the quarter blood quantum that was the original in ANCSA, and we kept that at Doyon in these first two enrollment decisions, but it's something that we'll likely have to face as people intermarry non-Natives or even American Indian. My children are part Tonawatam from southern Arizona, and that blood quantum doesn't help us maintain our quarter Alaskan blood quantum for Doyon purposes, for example.
Thank you, Aaron. Dad, as a tribal lawyer for Washington State, how do you end up getting involved in any cases that look at blood quantum, and any thoughts on how, even if you're, say, at the Baskin, but then in Aaron's case, his children are also have blood quantum from another tribe. Do you have any thoughts on the legal process for those to now get combined or identified as part of Native blood quantum in general? Any cases you can speak to?
Not really, Alyssa. The blood quantum that I deal with, I'm a federal prosecutor and I do criminal prosecutions in Indian country. Blood quantum is one of the things that you look at in establishing that someone is Indian or has Indian status. But beyond that, not really.
Thank you. Aaron, how do you consider your identity given that you're Athabaskan from the village of Tok and then also a Doyon shareholder?
Like many people in our region, and this may vary across the region, we identify with where we're from specifically first. And so culturally, I was raised in the upper Tanana, Tana Cross area. And, you know, that's really where I'd identify myself from first. For cultural purposes, even though tribally I'm from the native village of Tanana, which is 300 miles west. So, you know, those are the two first things for me. And then my Doyon shareholder status and, you know, being from the interior, closely associate myself with the Doyon Tanana Chiefs region. And that's probably the way most people in our region think of themselves, where their home community is first and then Doyon or Tanana Chiefs region second. But that probably varies by individual, and certainly I don't want to speak for the rest of the state. I don't know how people view themselves across the rest of our Alaska Native communities.
What about your children?
That's an interesting question. They're actually enrolled Tanawatam Nation in southern Arizona. And we spend some time there, but we also spend a lot of time in my region in interior Alaska. So a couple of them are probably too young to kind of figure it out, but they've been exposed to kind of all aspects of our culture and regions where we're from.
Thank you. And Dad, what are your hopes for your children and grandchildren's identity when it comes to Sea Alaska, Sciatica, Tlingit and Haida, and moms, Shek and Norwegian?
Well, my hopes are that, and Aaron spoke to this too, is that we continue to enroll our descendants, our children and grandchildren within Sea Alaska. People have always asked me, you know, where are you from? We have, as Native people, a collective identity, and I want my children and grandchildren to recognize their heritage, both Native and non-Native. And I think as a family, we've done a good job of that. My wife's family is from Montana, and they had cattle ranchers and ranched the same land for more than 100 years. And my family is originally from Angoon, but most recently from Ketchikan. Our kids had the opportunity to spend time on the ranch in Montana. And on our native lands and with family in Alaska. So my kids, and I hope that's true for our grandchildren. They get to walk in both worlds. We have traditional Native values that I think guide both Natives and non-Natives, and I'll just mention a couple of those. It's Ha'ani, which it means roughly respect for the land, that we are tied to the land in Alaska, and Pashuka, which means our past, our present, and our future. And I think as Native people, we think of the folks who came before us. We stand on their shoulders, but we also are very mindful of the future and laying the groundwork for future generations' success. So I'm very optimistic about our future. I think our corporation, Sea Alaska, has made great strides in the past few years and is on the right path.
Thank you, Dad. Can you talk about the community meetings that Sea Alaska goes to and how they steward their land, building off of what Aaron was saying about how Doyon stewards their land, and he touched on community meetings?
Well, COVID really changed our approach to community meetings. My last 18 months on the board, we didn't have a meeting per se. Everything was Zoom, and it's, you know, tough to say hello to folks through the thumbnails during a Zoom meeting. But in the past, we would go to our villages and we would meet with folks and hear their concerns. As a director of a regional corporation, you need to touch base with your constituents, your shareholders, both in Alaska and outside of Alaska. So our community meetings held in our traditional villages and communities in Southeast Alaska, but also in Seattle and Portland and elsewhere. We really, really enjoyed the opportunity to meet with shareholders, hear their concerns, and take those back with us.
I hope our audience can see that community meetings, both in the Doyon region and also in the region that Sea Alaska oversees, are a way for our community to gather and maintain their cultural connection to our land and to our corporations, which help to uphold our traditional values and our Native culture. Now, another individual that is joining us today from Anchorage, Alaska, is Cameron Poindexter. He's the president and CEO of Chagyug. He is a member of the Kuriyung tribe. And welcome to Native America Calling, Cameron.
Thank you, Alyssa. Glad to be here.
Thank you. How has ANCSA affected Alaska Native identity among younger generations who have lived under it their entire lives?
Well, so I guess the way that I would answer this is from my personal perspective. I am one of the descendants of shareholders born after 1971. And so and I grew up in an area of Alaska that's different from where my village corporation is located. So, you know, growing up, I participated in a normal sort of American education system where ANCSA wasn't necessarily taught in the schools. And so most of my education and connection to Alaska Native corporations has been through my employment experience and then higher level education, getting my MBA, actually being taught by the great Willie Hensley. And so, you know, my identity as an Alaska Native has evolved over the years, and my connection to the culture and the community has grown deeper since joining an Alaska Native corporation and working within one.
Thank you, Cameron. I also want to bring in Willie Kasayuli into the conversation from Akichak, Alaska. He's a member of the board of directors of the Chilista Corporation, a retired longtime tribal advocate, and a tribal member of the Akichak tribal community and shareholder of the Chilista Corporation. Welcome, Native America Calling, Willie.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So you've seen ANCSA take shape since the 70s. So how do you think it's been going, and how has it affected tribal identity?
During the mid-80s, we conducted a series of gatherings inviting tribal governments and elders from 18 of the communities. We also had participation from two Bristol Bay Native communities to talk about the impacts of ANCSA. Three things that the elders told us at the time was the importance of identity, the culture, and maintaining the land that was allocated to ANCs under ANCSA. Having said that, Jalista also conducted a series of meetings and questionnaires to our shareholders about enrolling the descendants. So in 2015, the shareholders approved the enrollment of the descendants into the corporation. And that started off enrolling the descendants in 2017. I think early on during those mid-80s, we viewed ANCSA not a perfect law, but also not including the descendants as mentioned earlier. But through this process of enrolling the descendants in 2017 into the shareholder status of Jalista Corporation, that took care of the concerns that the elders had. At the same time, when we went through the process of identifying who should be enrolled, the board went ahead and took away the blood quantum that's evident in the original shareholder status. So now descendants can and their parents would need to prove ancestral ties through their family trees in order for their children to be enrolled in Jalista Corporation as shareholders. And this is an ongoing effort where a child that may be born today, and if the parents wanted to enroll them, they can. So it's
Thank
not,
you, Willie. We have to go to break. I'm so sorry to cut you off. We'll hear more from you after the break. I hope for everyone listening that they can hear how much our identity as Alaska Natives are tied to our descendancy and that our corporations help steward that. This is Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. Call in at 1-800-996-2848.
As tribal leaders, we know we need to protect our elders, but it isn't always apparent what harms them. Some of our elders feel socially isolated or lonely. The more we are socially connected with our family and community, the less health problems we will have and the longer we will live. As tribal leaders, we can also create programs to help our elders. Connected Together, we'll stand strong. More on elder isolation and caregiver resources at connectedindigenouselders.org. The National Indian Council on Aging supports this show.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. What questions do you have about Alaska Native tribal identity? There's still time to join our conversation at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now we have a caller, Michael Thomas of Anchorage, Alaska, listening in on KNBA. He has a comment or question about that is critical of land stewardship. Oh, and the producer just said we lost that caller. So anyways, we will move on. Our guests today are Aaron Shutt, the president and CEO of Doyon Limited, Willie Casayuli, member of the board of directors for the Jalista Corporation and retired longtime tribal advocate, Cameron Poindexter, president and CEO of Chagyong Limited, and my father, Tate London, who was a federal prosecutor and was on the Sea Alaska board of directors for 15 years. Aaron, I'd like to ask you, how do you see Alaska Native identity continuing to evolve into the future?
Yeah, thanks, Alyssa. It's definitely something like all people evolve. And what we see in our region is a lot of migration, and our village communities continue to get smaller, and our urban Alaska Native population gets larger, and our population of Doyon shareholders outside of Alaska is another large and growing segment, which challenges us to deliver as both individuals and organizations that cultural knowledge that's tied to our land the further you get from our land. And so we see that as a challenge that we need to address. And some of this programming, online content with the language and other things is a part of addressing that, maintaining that tie to our region. These meetings that we have where we reintroduce people to the communities they're from, that kind of work is really important for us as well. But in the longer term, it's harder to say how that plays out as people get multiple generations and geographically further distant. I think you have a big chance of kind of losing those ties. And again, that's one of the important aspects of re-enrolling descendants of our Alaska Native shareholders, to at least have that introduction point to try and keep our cultures going wherever we live in the world.
Thank you, Aaron. Cameron, when you were speaking, you said that you've actually gotten to be more connected with your culture and your Alaska Native identity since you've been working for Alaska Native corporations. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So my trips to my mom's hometown, Dillingham, growing up, were limited just because of the increased cost in getting there and back. And now that I work for an Alaska Native corporation, I get to participate in cultural activities that I wouldn't otherwise get to do with both Bristol Bay Native Corporation and Trigon Limited, participating in annual harvest of subsistence fish and other animals and berries. And so because of my participation, my frequency and visits to these places. The other component of this that I think is invaluable for the younger generation is connecting with our elders and the folks that have lived largely traditional lifestyles that many modern younger Alaska Natives are less connected to. And as I work on a day-to-day basis to preserve culture, one of the most important activities that I take very seriously is to listen to stories of history, of lifestyle, of respect, humility, connection to the land, and I gain a greater and greater understanding of it as the years go by.
Thank you, Cameron. Dad, you were born in Ketchikan. You also spent time growing up in Oregon, and then you raised us in Seattle. This is the story of a lot of Alaska Native people, and Aaron touched on how they have programs at Doyon that help people reconnect with their traditional villages and also learn their language. Why is it so important to preserve culture, maintain a connection to our culture, and how are corporations helping with this?
So, again, I think it goes back to who we are as Native people. Native people have a collective orientation, family, land, where you're from. It's how folks introduce themselves. That, you know, where they're from, who their family is. And I think that there are pockets within the majority society that have a more collective view, but for the most part, a very individualistic view within our country outside of the Native communities. You lose culture, you lose language, you lose an important part of what it means to be Native and have Native heritage. And at Sea Alaska, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, SHI, has some great programs. And most recently, Sea Alaska made a substantial investment in language preservation. We have language teachers. Language is at the heart of Native identity. And so We have folks that are teaching language online, first-generation Tlingit speakers. We have some Haida speakers and Tsimshian speakers, but there's a recognition within Sea Alaska that we've got to take efforts now to preserve that language, an important part of our culture.
Thank you. Aaron, land is intrinsic to Alaska Native identity. Doyon has the most land, but the land is not controlled by the tribe. It's controlled by the corporation, and that's something very unique to ANCSA. Just a different way to think about it, would it be beneficial at all to give control to tribes instead of corporations, or why is it important the corporations control the land and are the stewards of it?
We get that question really frequently, and it on its face, you can kind of argue both sides. When you look at the practical realities of how everything was done in the 1970s post-ANCSA, it really doesn't work to think about giving land back to our 35 tribes in interior Alaska. And the reason is that land selections, there were certain mandatory land selections, and those are right around our villages, and that typically is village corporation surface, going on subsurface, and then in the next township over, so 6x6 area, it's Doyon, both surface and subsurface. But outside of that, a lot of our land was specifically allocated by the Doyon Board for different reasons, some of it for subsistence and cultural purposes, some of it for potential economic development purposes, and it didn't necessarily correlate with populations or anything else across the region. So in some parts of our region got very little land because they were close to non-native settlements, larger populations. For example, Doyon has zero ANCSA acres within the Fairbanks North Star Borough, which is a large land area right in the heart of our region. And 150 years ago had many native people and several villages. Now we have zero land. So that the patterns just don't make sense to reallocate to the tribes. And part of it as well is, although many of us are tribal members, some are not. And some, you know, like we talked about with my kids or me growing up a long way from where my tribe is, those things also come into play as we think about the structure and things that Indians from the lower 48 think about their reservation and their people. We have a little different structure up here with our tribes where each small community, in our case in the interior, was its own tribe rather than a group of communities, which is more common in the 48 states, organized as a tribe. So some of our tribes are very small, couple dozen members in some cases, and some of them are quite large, thousands of members. So there's a structural disconnect in how you would address that if you were to even consider trying to redo the land tenure structure in the interior.
So it makes sense for the regional corporation to be the main land steward and then to work with all of the subsidiaries, or not subsidiaries, village corporations, and also tribes, still give them access, but not have them be the landholder. That's what it sounds like. Cameron, though, what is your perceived relationship to the land? How is an individual Alaska Native person's relationship to it now? Do you see that changing in the future? Does it help you feel more connected to being Indigenous?
You know, I think in the recent history of Chugyeong Limited, at least in the very recent history, last 10 years or so, on our lands, we see increased use. And I think this is one of the most important things as Alaska Native Village Corporations we can do, is allow land access, and especially to our shareholders and other Native people. In rural Alaska, especially, use of the resource helps economically, individuals be able to put food on the table. And as time goes on, we adapt to the modern conveniences like boats and motors and ATVs and things to be able to access our lands better and better. And we've seen on our lands a lot of people doing that. And just recently, we take this so seriously and so with such reverence that moose populations and things in our area had declined somewhat, meaning our hunting season was a little bit muted, and our board of directors decided to restrict land access to our shareholders and Native people only. And it is primary to our identity. We come from the land, and the land sustains us, and it is what sustains us as Indigenous people. And I think going forward, this sort of philosophy is going to continue on and grow and flourish.
Thank you, Cameron. Dad, what do you see as a difference in identity for you, me, the others on the call today in terms of our Native identity versus the Native identity of tribal people in the lower 48 and many of the callers on Native American Calling and listeners?
Yeah, and I think Aaron touched on this a bit, and it's just given the structure created by ANCSA, we have folks who identify with their village or regional corporation. They may or may not be tribal members, and their tribe, just given where they live, if they live outside of Alaska, outside of their tribe service region, it may be that what they're seeing and their greatest tie is to their regional corporation rather than their tribe. And you don't have that as much in the lower 48. ANCSA created an artificial distinction between tribe and I'll call it tribal member corporations, the ANCs. That was the wisdom of Congress, is they wanted to try this grand experiment with the ANCSA corporations. And from my perspective, there are some great things within ANCSA. There are drawbacks that we deal with. But one of the great things about ANCSA is the revenue sharing. It's natural resource revenue sharing. And within the 12 regional corporations, you have corporations that are in areas that are resource rich, corporations that are not as rich in terms of developable resources. And 7i revenue sharing requires sharing of net revenues within those 12 regional corporations. So it's a situation of a rising tide lifting all boats. And I know in tough times, some of the regional corporations have really been dependent upon that revenue sharing.
Thank you, Dad. And thank you for teaching us about ANCSA and why it's important to be a shareholder growing up. I've grown up proud to be a Sea Alaska and Sheatica shareholder. Aaron, what's the easiest way for someone outside of Alaska to learn about ANCSA and regional corporations? And what do you think are some of the benefits of the regional corporation shareholder system? We're also almost about the end of our show, so you have about a minute.
Yeah, there are lots of online resources. So if you go to the ANCSA Regional Association, it has links to each of the 12 regional corporations. And on each of our websites, there's just a ton of information. Most of us have educational foundations as well that you can find through those various links that have lots of cultural and other information. So there, in the technological world we live in, there's just an opportunity to learn a lot from your home computer or laptop. And we think that's a really important tool for us, as we've talked about throughout the show, of keeping our identity and culture going as we mature in this world and move around and hopefully keep our ties to our home country.
Thank you, Aaron. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today. So for our audience, as we touched on today, tribal identity is just as important to the Indigenous people of Alaska as it is to those in the rest of North America and across the globe. The difference is Alaska has an act of Congress, now 50 years old, that sets the unique parameters of that identity. And it's not easy to get a detailed picture of that in just 1 hour or even from yesterday's show. That definition of identity has made headlines this past year when it came to distribute federal pandemic relief money. And hopefully today and yesterday's show provide some context for that discussion. I want to thank our guests today for a fascinating and illuminating discussion. Mr. Aaron Shutt, Mr. Cameron Poindexter, Mr. Willie Casaiuli, and my father, Tate London. We're back with another live show tomorrow where we welcome the organizers of a set of jigsaw puzzles that showcase Native artists. Thanks for listening to Native America Calling today. I'm Alyssa London. Have a great day.
Program support by Amerind. For 35 years, Indian Country has put its trust in Amerind, providing insurance coverage, strengthening Native American communities, protecting tribal sovereignty, and keeping dollars in Indian Country are Amerind's priorities. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto needs at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com. Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.